We see a lot about toddlers and children witnessing birth and how beautiful it is, how natural it is, how normal. But we never hear about toddlers witnessing death, being present for it, involved in it, at least not in this culture. I worried a lot about how to explain it in a developmentally friendly way. I worried I'd cause more harm. But the way we try to protect and shield children from these natural parts of life usually does cause more harm. Birth is natural, and so is death.
Welcome to the Well-Nourished Mother Podcast. This is a show for women who desire a deeper, more mindful, and meaningful pregnancy, birth, and motherhood experience. In this space, we bring so much reverence to the rite of passage that is the maiden to mother journey. I'm your host, Lauren Fortuna Flock, founder of Nest and Nourish. I'm an ex-nurse turned birth worker, holistic nutritionist, and somatic coaching student with a fiery passion for birth prep and motherhood prep that blends the head and the heart. Join me for inspiring conversations with experts, mothers, and all-around badass wise women, exploring all the ways we can nourish ourselves, body, mind, and heart, in pregnancy, birth, and motherhood. This space will help you cultivate the knowledge, practices, and resources you need to be the most embodied, vibrant, authentic, intuitive, and well-nourished mother you deserve to be. So welcome. Let's do this.
Welcome to episode 11 of the Well-Nourished Mother Podcast. This one is going to be a little different. It's just me. And while it's not totally focused on birth or pregnancy or motherhood, I think all of those themes will be weaved in so beautifully because we're talking about death. And I promise it won't all be super sad. There's truly so much beauty in death, which I know can be really hard for some people to imagine. But I've witnessed so many deaths as a former hospice nurse, and I can truly say that death shows us what's really important. The experiences I've had, just so profound. And this episode will highlight that, the beauty of death, how I navigated it with a toddler, and how I'm showing up for my business in this season of grief. So, we had a death in the family about 3 weeks ago now. A little backstory. My mother-in-law was diagnosed with ovarian cancer about 2 years ago, and she was given a prognosis of about 2 to 4 years at the time. I was able to be her personal nurse through it all, which I cherish so much. If she were here, she'd be telling you all, my personal nurse Lauren saved my life. In my eyes, all I did was listen to her lungs, and it was so apparent that she had a lung full of fluid. But somehow it was missed at the walk-in clinic. So we sent her to the ER, and that was the beginning of her diagnosis. Stage 4 ovarian cancer that had spread to the lining around her lung. She went through multiple rounds of chemo, surgery, and suffered from a lot of the awful typical symptoms and struggles that come with this diagnosis. It's been a really slow but apparent decline for her over these last 2 years, balanced with many beautiful, joy-filled moments and memories, of course. Her body really started to rapidly decline a few weeks before her death, and she made the decision to utilize MAID, or medical assistance in dying, which is readily accessible here in British Columbia where I live. So on August 29th, my mother-in-law died while being held by her closest family. So this episode is about death, yes, but it's also about this revolution of female business owners unsubscribing from more masculine hustle culture. So, not that I owe any kind of explanation for skipping a podcast release 2 weeks ago, but when all of this happened, I had to make a choice. Do I hustle through and try to pump out an interview or a solo episode when I'm just not in that headspace or heart space? Or do I embody what's really true and present for me, saying fuck you to strategy and expectation? Well, you know which one I picked. It seems trivial compared to death, but this is the duality of life and death. Someone dies, but the world continues on. Responsibilities continue. Making that decision was me stepping into my matriarch, mature, feminine archetype. This is me embodying this revolution of matriarch business where I create out of desire and overflow, not from this strategic, masculine need to do so. Yeah, I could have hustled through. I could have figured out something that would have been energetically misaligned. But instead, I listened to my body, I rested, I let go of expectations. I let go of business strategy. I let go of perfectionism. It was a reminder that I get to make the rules. This is my project, my creative outlet, my business. I get to do things my way while still growing, still being successful. And we get to reclaim what success even means. We get to redefine it and create it for ourselves. So yeah, I could have felt like a failure, but instead I feel embodied, true, authentic, vulnerable, and it feels full of ease and surrender. The healing perfectionist part of me got to increase her capacity and learn just a little bit more that it's safe to be real and all of me is worthy as I am. I know some of you might be thinking, so what? You skipped a podcast release. Someone died. But of course, somehow, it was a big deal for me. These old wounds of feeling like not enough, not good enough somehow. And, you know, all while I preached to everyone else that you need to tend to yourself first. In some online business circles, it totally wouldn't be acceptable. You hustle through, you put your emotions aside and you get it done. But no thanks, not here. You won't get that from me. I'm all about embodiment and I'm all about being real. So this is the matriarch-led business revolution, doing things our way that feels authentic and embodied, not just doing things to match some expert business strategy created by a man. And this is true for any reason, not something as huge as death. So in my mother-in-law's death, I learned a very valuable lesson about rest, about embodiment, and about creating from overflow, not from strategy. It reminded me that I'm creating the life I want, and my business and creative projects fit into that life. I don't create my life, the important stuff around my business. Her death also taught me so many other lessons. And the main thing I want to focus on and share today is about how I navigated all of this with my 2-year-old. I don't think it's talked about in our culture enough. Thankfully, I don't know many others personally who have had to navigate a death in the immediate family with their toddler. But of course, there's so many people who do. So maybe this might help someone. I hope it doesn't. I hope you never have to experience it, but just in case. So my daughter, Zoe, and her ma, short for grandma, a nickname she very quickly created for her all on her own, they were very close. One of the silver linings, if you want to call it that, of my mother-in-law's diagnosis was that both my mother-in-law and father-in-law, Sue and John, ended up living with us for most of the last 2 years. They wanted to be closer to better healthcare. So they got to develop such an incredibly close relationship with their granddaughter, something that wouldn't have happened otherwise because of the 2,000 plus kilometers between our homes. They saw so many of my daughter's firsts and supported us in the small ways they could while also navigating cancer and all of the challenges it brought. So as Ma got sicker and sicker, I knew I needed to start prepping my daughter. We were always clear about the fact that Ma was sick. And honestly, I think my daughter could just tell. Over time, the way Sue couldn't get down on the floor anymore to play or couldn't lift Zoe up anymore, Zoe knew something was changing. When someone is dying of cancer, it can be a little unpredictable at the end. Not even dying of cancer, dying of anything other than, you know, a tragic accident. Death is unpredictable. Like not knowing exactly when her last breath would be, if we would be with her or not. So when Sue made the decision to have MAID, medical assistance in death, I knew it meant we could all be with her, surrounding her, and that Zoe would be fully present for it all. We see a lot about toddlers and children witnessing birth and how beautiful it is, how natural it is, how normal. But we never hear about toddlers witnessing death, being present for it, involved in it, at least not in this culture. I worried a lot about how to explain it in a developmentally friendly way. I worried I'd cause more harm, but the way we try to protect and shield children from these natural parts of life usually does cause more harm. Birth is natural, and so is death. Death is so shrouded in mystery in our culture. It happens behind closed doors with so many euphemisms to try to soften the blow. They passed away. We lost them. These abstract ways of describing death are so confusing to a young mind that can only understand concrete terms and concrete ideas. So I worried how she'd react. I worried if I would be able to experience my own grief while also supporting her and hers. I worried about scaring her, scarring her. But I always went back to my values. I want her to understand life and death, the fragility, the beauty, the natural cycle of it. I don't want there to be fear and stigma around dying. So I knew that being open and honest and giving her the opportunity to be present for it would be the best way to go about it for us. Both my husband and I agreed that we would guide her, but let her really lead the way. If she wanted to leave the room, I'd go with her. If she wanted to stay, we'd stay. We all knew this was coming, that at some point Sue was going to die. But once she made the decision to have made, and only 4 days from the day she told us, it became so real, and my need to prepare took over. I furiously Googled and researched and reached out to local resources. I was hyper aware that this could be traumatic for a two-year-old, or it could be beautiful. And it was all in how we presented it to her and included her. We had this beautiful gift that not everyone gets of knowing the death date rather than it being an accident, a trauma. And this gave us such a beautiful chance to prepare her. Trauma is anything that's too much, too soon, or too fast for your nervous system. So I knew that preparing her ahead of time and going slow, titrating the experience for her was going to be so important. The biggest things I learned in my furious Googling were to just be honest, but keep it simple. Use concrete language that's developmentally appropriate. Keep it focused on the physical body. So things like her body is shutting down, her body will stop working. And to let the child lead the way with questions. I'll be sure to link some really fantastic resources about how to talk to children about death and dying and serious illness in the show notes. So for 3 days, we sat vigil, a beautiful gathering of close friends and family, each taking turns, spending time with Sue, sharing stories, playing music, giving massages, writing songs about her, sharing meals and wine. It was a truly beautiful experience. This death portal, the early days as someone is coming close to death, reminds me so much of the birth portal, how we sit vigil around a laboring woman, offering comfort and support, witnessing her, holding her. It's the same in death, at least this kind of expected death. We all sat around her, supporting her in the ways we each knew how, witnessing her. We prepared my daughter Zoe by telling her that we were going to say goodbye to Ma soon. That her body was sick with cancer, that her body was shutting down, and soon it would stop working. Her heart would stop beating, her lungs would stop breathing. Each time we told her, she seemed to accept it without asking any further questions. Honestly, I wasn't sure if that meant she was grasping it or if it was going completely over her head, but I knew it was important to tell her, to prepare her. And yeah, while in some ways I wasn't sure if she was grasping it, in other ways she showed such understanding. She showed so much compassion towards her dying Ma in those final few days. Tight hugs while saying, "I take care of you, Ma," while gently stroking her arm or leg, putting stickers on her face with a big smile, singing to her while her cousin played the guitar. It was so, so beautiful and heartbreaking all at once. So in the moment, experiencing it all so fully. Toddlers have this amazing way of bringing you into the present moment. So after 3 days of sitting vigil and saying our goodbyes, the fourth day came, the death day. It's such an odd thing to know the date of your death, kind of like knowing the date of your child's birth too. We have these medicalized ways of controlling the uncontrollable. And no matter what your opinion of these interventions is, one thing is for sure. When they're done with true informed consent, they really can reduce suffering, provide dignity, and give people that little bit of control for something otherwise unknown and uncontrollable. So on the death day, the doctor and her nurse arrived at 1 p.m. Zoe had actually fallen asleep out on the deck on a couch and was sleeping soundly. There was this like split second where I thought to myself, should we just let her sleep? But what if she misses it? How could I deprive her of saying goodbye? So we gently woke her up. She usually wakes up a little cranky, but this time I immediately whispered to her, "Zoe, it's time to say goodbye to Ma." And she popped right up and eagerly said, "I say bye to Ma now." So matter of fact, so ready, no tears, no fuss. She then climbed on top of Ma's failing body and gave her honestly the tightest and longest hug ever. No wiggling, no squirming, just this solid, tight hug as Ma whispered, "I love you. You're my special girl," in her ear. Then we all gathered around her, her closest family, the family she created, her legacy, all holding on to her as she prepared to drift off for her big sleep, as she called it. Zoe sat happily in my lap, requesting snacks and stickers, so I obliged. Some of the last sounds Sue would have heard were of the loud crunching of carrots and Zoe happily asking me which sticker I'd like. She brought such levity to the room, the perfect balance for death, the sounds of young life, the innocence. Zoe happily decorated the bed with tiny stickers and placed a sunshine sticker right on Ma's big toenail as the doctor prepared the medications, a beautiful decoration to send her off with. Some of Sue's last words were about how life is all about joy and laughter. She said, "Go into nature or go shopping at Winners. Just enjoy yourself." And as the first medication they used to elicit a deep sleep entered her veins, she managed to say one last thing. "I had a beautiful life and a beautiful home. Thank you. I'm so grateful." Sue slipped away gently, gracefully, and with dignity, no longer suffering. There were tears, there was laughter, there was loud crunching of carrots, and lots of giggles from Zoe. And every one of us held on to Sue tightly as she took her final breath. It truly was a beautiful and perfect death. As a former hospice nurse, I've witnessed a lot of deaths. Some peaceful, surrounded by family, some full of distress and gripping on, alone with only my hand to hold. But this was truly a beautiful death, a perfect death. In the time afterwards, we welcomed Zoe into the room to see Ma's body. We reiterated that we love Ma and that we will miss her so much, that her body has now stopped working and won't work again. Zoe placed this cardboard necklace that we had popped out of an activity book. She stuck it around Ma's lifeless body's neck. It was this beautiful way to decorate, respect, and send off her body, and it felt just so ceremonial and beautiful to witness. Once the funeral home had come and removed Sue's body, we tidied up. Zoe had been cooped up inside for days, so we agreed to take her to the park to run around. Again, this duality of life and death, the thing we were all preparing for, waiting for, the climax, the crescendo had happened. And there were tears, but there was laughter too. The world continues on, and especially with a toddler. She needed to release some energy, so off we went to the park. At the park, she was standing in this big fire truck pretending to drive. And Cohen, my husband, said, "Where should we go?" And Zoe said, "Ma and Pa's house." And then she kind of stopped and shook her head to correct herself and said, "No, just Pa's house." Cohen and I just stared at each other with wide eyes. We couldn't really believe what we just heard. I guess she understands all my worry, all my reading and preparing. All she needed was the truth. Ma has a disease called cancer. It's making her body not work anymore. Soon her body will stop working. Her lungs will stop breathing. Her heart will stop beating. We're saying goodbye to Ma soon because she's going to die. We won't see her anymore. We love her very much. We miss her very much. The plain and simple truth in simple, concrete terms. In the few weeks since, Zoe has said a number of other things that just further confirm that on some level, she understands. She's yet to ask, "Where's Ma?" She seems content with what happened. And of course, we won't really know until we can, you know, have a more full conversation with her in the future. But right now, she seems like she's fully accepted what happened and understands at least that we won't see Ma anymore. I was driving her to the rec center for a swim the other day. I told her I needed to stop for gas first. And she said, "No, pool first." And I said, "But Zoe, if I don't stop and get gas, the truck will stop working." And she kind of paused and then said, "Like Ma." And then there was this other time that we found a dead mouse outside. I told her the mouse is dead. His body stopped working. And again, she said, like Ma. So on some level, we know she understands. We're proud of her. We're proud of us and how we handled it all. And we remain open to whatever reactions, emotions, or questions arise as she gets older. Right now, we're focusing on connection, reiterating how much we love Ma, how much her Ma loved her, and sharing stories and photos to keep her memory alive. It truly was just such a beautiful experience to have her there with us. The last thing I want to touch on here is that over these last few weeks, I just can't stop thinking about how similar birth and death really are. They're both these deeply transitional states. Birth brings hope and potential, while death reminds us of the wisdom and lessons learned throughout a lifetime. And it reminds us of what's really important. Whether it's a new life entering the world or one leaving, these transitional states are so energetically charged. I've personally experienced the energetic shift that happens when someone dies. Anytime I've been present for the actual moment of death, I've felt the shift from there being, say, like two energies, two conscious beings to one. It's a crazy feeling. Both birth and death hold intense emotions. There's this mix of anticipation, anxiety, joy, love, and sadness. Like I said before, the way we sit vigil for a dying person is akin to holding space for a laboring mother. In both cases, it's about being present, offering comfort, and providing a supportive environment. It's this sacred act to witness and be there for someone in their most vulnerable moments, in birth and in death. Birth and death are both these journeys into the unknown. No matter how much we prepare, there's this element of uncertainty and unpredictability, and both experiences can be profoundly humbling, reminding us of the mysteries of life and of existence. Both of these natural processes are deeply ingrained in the human experience. They're part of the circle and cycle of life, and acknowledging their similarities can help us embrace the full spectrum of human existence. Lastly, I can't stop thinking about the similarities in terms of community and connection. These moments bring people together. A birthing mother surrounded by her support team, and the dying person often surrounded by loved ones. I think it's a testament to the power of human connection and the importance of community in times of transition. So there it is. I've shared a little bit about why I missed a podcast recording a couple weeks ago, how I'm embodying this mature, feminine way of doing business, not subscribing to, you know, these outdated masculine ways of hustling through. I've shared this really personal, impactful experience of my mother-in-law's beautiful, perfect death, and how incredible it was to have my toddler present. I've shared, you know, the ways that we navigated it, the language that we used, and how she seems to be understanding it and showing us that it's okay and that she gets it. And lastly, I've shared how there are so many similarities between birth and death. So while no one really wants to talk about death or hear about death, if you've made it this far, thank you. Thank you for listening, because I know that there is so much to take away from this. And even though it's kind of this like scary topic that nobody wants to talk about, again, I think it's so important that we share these stories and that we normalize death, just how we're trying to normalize birth as well, as this beautiful, natural, sacred experience. So thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. Definitely hop on over to Instagram, join the conversation at Nest and Nourish. Let me know what you thought about this. If you have any questions about anything I've talked about, get in touch. And like I said, I'll share some links in the show notes for some really great resources about how to talk to children about death, dying, and serious illness. So once again, thank you, and I will see you next time.